live July 21st, 2005. And you're welcome to join us on the program. Jonathan, do we have all the glitches worked out of here now?
Everything's working, to my knowledge.
Everything is working. According to Evolution, this ought to be a TV program someday, you know? I mean, automatically, our voice will turn into a picture. Yeah. So, if you want to join the program, you can hop on here by calling 850-479-DINO, 850-479-3466, or you can instant message us at Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLive. Come on and join us, call in, and we're going to talk about creation, evolution, and dinosaurs. We are the folks who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate, and the evolution theory being taught in our schools is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. Anybody that believes this evolution theory needs some serious help, and we're here to help them. We have the technology, or as Ali G said, the technology. We have it right here. We can help. So you call in if you believe in evolution or if you believe in creation, have any questions. We defend the view that the Bible is true, that Earth is about 6,000 years old. The whole universe is about 6,000 years old. God made it all, A-L-L, everything, all, in six literal 24-hour days. And it's not billions and billions of years old. And dinosaurs lived with man. They called them dragons all through history. There could be a few stragglers still alive. There certainly have been a bunch of sightings like Loch Ness Monster and Lake Champlain Monster and stuff like that. And I don't get into much of other stuff like Bigfoot. I do kind of mention, you know. But Jonathan, I had a lady call me today. This is her second time she has seen a Bigfoot. I said, I don't know, ma'am. Honestly, I've interviewed 10 people who claim they've seen one. I don't know. I wish I had an answer for that one.
She saw a Bigfoot or a Bigfoot?
Bigfoot creature. My brother has two big feet. You know?
I would say, yeah.
I've seen a couple. Shaquille O'Neal has really big feet.
Yep.
You know, I mean, we're talking. Well, do you see that casting up there? Did you see that one? The guy said
I did, yeah.
I brought that home. That's from, there's a note with it, I don't know, a casting of a Bigfoot. You know, I don't know what to think about that. But we'll stick with dinosaurs and creation. So I got to click on this man. You can instant message us, AOL, instant message us at Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLive. Okay, we are doing several things here in the program, trying to strengthen your faith in the Word of God, or if you're not a Christian, to get you converted. And I do have some AOL instant messages hanging around from yesterday and the day before. I'm sorry about that. I'm trying to get to it. But we'll hurry here. So you can join us on the program. We take phone calls first. We drop everything when somebody calls and give them time to voice their opinion, pro or con, and we try to straighten them out if they believe in evolution. Here's today's WorldNet Daily. Evolution Watch, it's called. 400 scientists skeptical of Darwin. Theory, the great white elephant of contemporary thought. Posted July 21st, 2005. More than 400 scientists from all disciplines have signed onto a growing list of skeptics of claims for the ability of random mutation and natural selection to account for the complexity of life, according to a Seattle-based Discovery Institute. What do you think, Jonathan? Can you believe a scientist can be skeptical of evolution? I mean, is that allowed? I don't know. He's got his headphones on over there. Oh. Okay. He's thinking about something else. I suspect we're going to get some callers to say, look, anybody skeptical of evolution is no longer a scientist, and therefore all scientists believe in evolution. I mean, that's the way the logic works, you know. So here's, I'm reading your article here, worldnetdaily.com. It says, Darwin's theory of evolution is the great white elephant of contemporary thought, said David Berlinski, a mathematician and philosopher of science with the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, or CSC. It is large, almost completely useless, and the object of superstitious awe. That's a good way to put it, the great white elephant. Love it. I'm going to have to use that one. Okay. The Discovery Institute, a leading proponent of intelligent design, first published its statement of dissent from Darwin in 2001. The think tank challenged statements made in the PBS Evolution series, which claimed that no scientist disagreed with Darwinian evolution. The fact is that a significant number of scientists are extremely skeptical that Darwinian evolution can explain the origins of life, said John West, associate director of CSC. We expect that as scientists engage in the wider debate over materialistic evolutionary theories, this list will continue to grow and grow at an even more rapid pace than we've seen this past year. The Institute says that in the past 3 months, 29 scientists, including 8 biologists, have signed the statement, which includes more than 70 biologists. Two prominent Russian biologists from Moscow State University, and it gives their hard names to pronounce, are recent signers. So it is not true that all scientists believe in evolution. Number two, it wouldn't matter if all scientists did believe in evolution. That still is not how you determine truth. They just don't get it, Jonathan. Okay. So they try to, we get these guys to call in and give, to try to give this unified front, like, oh, all evolutionists, all scientists believe such and such. Baloney. So, of course, if you don't believe it, then you're no longer a scientist.
Yeah. I'll be honest, if every scientist in the world believed it, then it would at least make me a bit more receptive of it, because, I mean, that would just seem like a logical thing to me, but it is far from all of them. I mean, it's all the wrong ones believe it, maybe.
Washington Post did a survey in 98, you know, 7 years ago, and said 55% believe in Darwinian evolution.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nearly half that don't. Okay. What's this? BBC News, 4 billion year chill on Mars.
Yeah.
A chemical study of Martian meteorites implies that the planet has always been cold and was rarely above freezing. Writing in Science, researchers have been able to determine the maximum temperature the rock experienced. There is no evidence that it was ever warm, they say, as it records near-surface conditions for 4 billion years. The water erosional feature seen on Mars must have been made during very brief periods, they conclude. Although the current average temperature of the Martian equator is about minus 55 Celsius, that's pretty chilly, many scientists believe that the red planet was once warm enough for water to have existed on its surface and for life to possibly have evolved. I'm sure they believe that. Like the guy called in and said there's 11 trillion star planets out there, you know. Because there's stars, there must be planets. Yeah, that's good thinking. He says this ALH84001 meteorite couldn't have been above freezing for more than a million years during the last 3.5 billion years of history. How on earth can he tell something like that, Jonathan? He knows that meteorite.
Yeah, it's one of those turkey-baster thermometer type things.
Oh, they drill a hole in it, stick it in?
Plug it in there.
Okay. Yeah.
Come back and check it every 30 minutes.
So that's how you can tell a meteorite as could never have been heated to a temperature higher than 350 Celsius. Okay. Well, I could have told them that. You know, just like they say the Earth was a hot molten mass. No, it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Never a hot molten mass. I mean, the radio polonium halos prove that. It was always, you know, the Bible says it was created under water. So it's got to be, you know, somewhere less than 212 degrees. Okay, we have another thunderstorm blowing in, huh, Jonathan?
Saw a large blanket of black clouds coming in.
Yeah, we get that a lot around Pensacola. It cools it off in the afternoon.
Yeah, it only rains twice a week. That's the good thing.
First time for 3 days, and second time for 4 days.
Yeah, not too bad.
Not bad.
If you can cope with twice a week, you're all right.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. BBC News, another article. Planet Impact Forms Dust Disk by David Whitehouse, science editor, BBC News website. An unusually thick ring of dust around another star could hold clues about planet formation, say astronomers. Send more money to continue the research, says Kent Hovind. This is the hidden message in this. We think we found something cool. There's a dust cloud, you know. Who's the guy in, Pigpen, you know, in the Peanuts cartoon that always has a dust cloud around him? He's always so dirty. Everywhere he goes, there's a little dust cloud around him. He's just dirty.
The Peanuts cartoon.
Peanuts, Lucy. You haven't seen Peanuts cartoon? Charlie Brown?
In the comic books? Or
Charlie Brown, Peanuts. One of the characters was Pigpen. Who cares?
All right, is Peanuts a little yellow bird?
No, that... I don't remember the name of the bird.
Charlie Brown. Snoopy.
They all got the round head. Yeah, Snoopy drives the airplane, the Red Baron, always cursing the Red Baron.
The kid that drags the little blanket around, plays the tiny piano.
Yeah, yeah, that's the kid that plays the piano. I forget who that is. Linus. It's been years since
I've no idea. I don't know any of these names.
Before your time. Okay. So anyway, they see a dust cloud, and that's proof that we all came from a rock. Man, oh man. It says, we were lucky. The set of observations is like finding the proverbial needle in the haystack. Hey, they had a special last week sometime on Mythbusters,
mm-hmm.
where they found the needle in the haystack.
Actually found it.
Well, they put four needles in a haystack and said, okay, figure out a way to separate it out, you know. And these guys were doing different techniques to separate the needle from the haystack. It's pretty cool. I think basically a real waste of time and hay
mm-hmm.
and TV space. But, you know, I watched a few minutes of it and said, well, I'm going to change the channel. Okay.
Well, someone just wrote in and said that the little bird's name was Woodstock.
Woodstock, that's right.
Thank you.
It wasn't like a hippie bird or something, was it? Woodstock? Hippie bird?
I don't know. Could be. Okay, here's WorldNet Daily. Prophet, quote, looks to call UFOs in all 50 states. He claims powers that be don't want the public to know the spaceships are real. Prophet Yahweh.
Yeah.
Oh, he's taking God's name for himself. There's a black guy with a turban on his head and a little, you know, star in the front to hold it on so it doesn't fall off and make him look important. He's got a very serious look on his face. And a name like Yahweh,
mm-hmm.
everybody better listen and show him, you know, and I'm sure send money.
I don't know. If I walked around calling myself Prophet Yahweh, I'd be watching my back. Well, actually, if you got God coming after you, you better watch your back, front, left, right.
You better, and above.
Inside, out.
And
you better
down.
Watch everything.
Yeah. Here we go. July 21st, today. A self-styled prophet who made news recently by allegedly summoning the appearance of UFOs in the Las Vegas area is now looking to recreate the feat in all 50 states. Raymond Watkins, also known as Prophet Yahweh, says he'll begin a national tour August 7th and is asking television and radio stations across America to allow him the chance to prove his ability to communicate with extraterrestrials. Watkins caused a stir in late May when an ABC TV affiliate in Las Vegas put his claims to the test. He agreed to meet with a reporter and camera crew of CTNV at a location of their choice and time. What they witnessed and captured on camera stunned the reporter and the crew. At 2:30 p.m. local time, May 26, Prophet Yahweh was documented summoning two UFOs for the station's cameras above Doolittle Park.
Mm.
One of the unidentified flying objects was stationary in the sky while the other flew across Las Vegas. Then it turned around and came back on the same path. Despite the TV's station's coverage of the event and a mention in WorldNet Daily, there was little news coverage outside Nevada. The powers that be stopped the story from being made known because they did not want humanity to find out UFOs are real, said Prophet Yahweh. The spaceship would never have appeared if I was not filmed calling it down. This is what the space beings wanted. They wanted me captured on film with their spaceship so everyone would know that beings have chosen me to speak for them and no other person. Space beings kept their end of the bargain by sending a real UFO on my signal that was documented. But Lost Wages Media refused to film me calling down the spaceship. That's why it never happened. Did it happen or did it not happen?
I don't know. They said it was documented, but then he just said that they refused to film it.
Maybe it's one of those that only he could see.
I don't know. I have no
idea. He called
idea.
It in, and only he could see it. You know, like Jehovah's Witnesses, you know, said the Lord's going to come in 1914.
Mm-hmm.
And then 1915 rolls around, and they said, well, he came, but y'all didn't see him. Only we saw him. Okay, right.
There was also, apparently the Mormon Church is trying to charge one of their ex-members with adultery. Apparently he wrote a book, you know, how they have those books and videos up, the DNA evidence against the Mormon Church.
Right.
Well, there was some geneticist that was a member of the Mormon Church and then wrote this book or did a video documentary about the DNA evidence against the Mormon Church or against Mormonism. And instead of charging him with heresy, he's, I guess, going before some board of Mormons to be excommunicated from the Mormon Church for adultery. Because, I guess, 5 years ago, after he and his wife had split up, he had been with another woman. And so instead of charging him with heresy for trying to destroy their church with DNA evidence.
Then they can just, whenever somebody brings up his research, they'll say, well, he's a disgruntled Mormon and he's, you know, out of the church for adultery. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they just, you know, destroy his name. Yeah. You do that with me, too. I mean, I've got how many Antihoven websites where they pick on the dumbest things, you know? Here we go. One more, and then we'll get to your questions here. AOL Instant Message, Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLive. Or you can call in 850-479-DINO. Go to extension 136. Here's WorldNet Daily has an article, Anti-Tax Patriot, on Farrah Show today. Joe Bannister. He is not anti-tax. I don't know why people say I'm anti-tax. I'm not anti-tax.
I don't know. These people, they're actually generous to his position. I think they just misunderstood it. If it's not anti-tax.
I understand. But I'm not a tax protester.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody should obey the law.
Yeah.
Especially the IRS. guy called me today and said a client of his, I talked to him just an hour ago, okay? This client of his had the IRS come to his house, 6 in the morning, he and his wife, still in their bedclothes, got them out, put them on the couch at gun, put a pistol to their head, held them there for 8 hours, while the IRS ransacked the house, stole $50,000 in gold and silver this guy had, gold coins and silver coins, his coin collection, okay? Mm-hmm. Took it all to trial, and the jury thought the IRS was stupid and threw the whole thing out and said, this guy's not guilty of anything. So they let him go. IRS kept the guy's money. They never did give it back. Still haven't given it back. They're thieves. They're liars.
There's a Larkin Rose who's also in a similar situation right now. He's the guy that over at 861.info on the internet. And he came just recently on a radio program and said, hey, Larkin, you know, how you doing? And his response was, well, as good as anybody could be doing when a super giant wants to crush you. You know, he actually encouraged people to print in their local papers, Dear IRS, prosecute me, Larkin Rose. You know, he actually called them down to prosecute him. And so they look real goofy in court with him now because they didn't go after this guy. He invited himself into their courtroom to go to court with them over this tax issue, income tax issue. Interesting subject.
Well, if it was a level playing field and justice prevailed, it'd be great, mm-hmm. you know, because I have always tried very hard to obey the law, you know. The problem is they don't. They're liars. They're thieves. Obviously, they live with themselves, man. We'll be back after the break, folks. Hang in there and join us here, Dr. Dino. Bye.
Millions of people in Southeast Asia, December 26th will never be forgotten. The tsunami that hit 11 countries devastated millions of lives that will take decades to rebuild. Lifeline, America's most trusted Christian telecom company, has another way for you to help. No, we're not asking for donations. We're simply asking you to take what you already use, long-distance service, and put your phone bill to work. Changing lives. Call Lifeline now. Switch your service. Get the lowest rates like 2.9 cents per minute and help places such as Indonesia, Sri Lanka, and Thailand while the doors are open so wide. At Lifeline, we donate a portion of your phone bill to relief ministries that you choose, and we've been doing it for almost 15 years.
Phone 1-800-311-2418. Your participation with Lifeline will help Truth Radio. 800-311-2418.
Pull over if possible, 10-851. White female driving a light blue SUV. Appears very agitated. Please be advised I'm approaching the vehicle now.
Why did you stop me? I didn't do anything. It was that moron up there who pulled in front of me. He didn't even use his turn signal.
Ma'am, please keep your hands in plain sight and hand me your license. Slowly.
Fine. Here.
Mrs. Smith, and your vehicle registration?
What for? I didn't do anything wrong.
Your registration, please.
Oh, hang on. Let me find it. Here.
Oh, I see you own this vehicle.
Of course I own this car. Why did you pull me over?
You have a Jesus is Lord and a WWJD bumper sticker on your car. When I saw you yelling obscenities and such at that other driver, I naturally assumed the car was stolen. My mistake. Have a nice day.
Do people see Jesus in you? A message from Lifeline Productions. 1-800-52-FUNNY at lifelinepro.com.
All right, welcome back, folks, to segment two of the Creation Science Hour and a Half. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson live here in Pensacola, Florida, July 21st of 05. And you're welcome to join us by calling 850-479-3466, 850-479-3466, or 877-479-3466. Either one will get you to. And then go to extension 136, and you'll be live on the air where everybody all over the world is listening, waiting to hear what radical statements will come out of some of these callers' mouths, claiming that they believe they came from a rock 4.6 billion years ago. Slowly, of course. Or quickly, if you're from Harvard. Okay, let me take some of your instant messages here. Well, first I want to finish this one more news article, WorldNet Daily. It says, anti-tax patriot on Farrah's show today. Ex-IRS agent Joe Bannister says citizens are not required to pay federal levy. Joe Bannister, the former IRS agent who believes citizens are not required to pay federal income taxes, will be the guest today on Joseph Farrah's WorldNet Daily Radio Active, the nationally syndicated talk program. Last month, Joe Bannister was acquitted on charges he attempted to defraud the government. The certified public accountant in San Jose, California, has been telling his clients they don't need to file federal income tax returns because the 16th Amendment, which gives Congress the power to lay and collect taxes on incomes, was never properly ratified. Don't think that's what he tells them, is it? Is it?
I didn't know that one. I thought his position was more similar to a Lark and Roses, where they show the code itself and how American citizens who derive their income from within the United States are not applicable. They don't apply for the federal income tax if they get all their income from within the United States. So
maybe so. Okay. I mean, there's probably 30 or 40 reasons that you could
FreedomAboveFortune.com if they want to check out Bannister's website.
FreedomAboveFortune.com. Okay. Well, it sure cost him a fortune to keep his freedom. I'll tell you what.
Oh, yeah.
These guys, they fight you and bankrupt you, and then when they lose, it's, oh, well, let's go find somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's just kind of like a bully on a playground. You either pay him and don't get beat up, or you get the other kids together and beat the snot out of this bully and
right.
teach him a lesson.
That's right. Okay. Anyway, interesting. That's WorldNet Daily about Joe Bannister. That was so interesting that he was, you know, found innocent of all charges.
Went to court with the IRS and innocent.
Well,
they had like 13 accounts or a bunch of crazy stuff.
Yeah, they always do that, you know.
Willful intent not to file income tax, you know, 13 attempts to defraud the government, all this crazy stuff. And
yeah, they throw as much mud at you as they can, hope something sticks, you
mm-hmm.
know. But he's
ridiculous.
Teflon, nothing sticks. Okay, here we go. CH Soldier 311 writes in, I asked this question yesterday, but I couldn't connect to the URL. Anyway, my question is, according to the chart, a fern has 10 times as many chromosomes as a human. In fact, 5 of the plants you mentioned had more chromosomes than humans. Yet humans, at least in my opinion, are more complex than plants. Does possession of more chromosomes make a creature more complex, or is there little or no relation? Jonathan, you've been studying this for some time. I don't think that certainly the number of chromosomes doesn't follow the expected evolution pattern, nor does the amount of just the pure amount of DNA, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It may or may not be, you know, chromosomes may have nothing to do with it, but just the DNA itself. I mean, there's amoebas have a lot more DNA, you know, a lot more just the number of genes than many, many animals, so... What's your take on all that?
I don't know. It's pretty much the same thing. It's always been that chromosomes don't define the complexity. It's what's actually in the chromosomes that do. So the more the merrier, I guess. I don't know. It doesn't necessarily make you more complex than anybody else if you have more than them. It's what's actually in the chromosome itself.
Let's apply this to like computer codes or computer languages. Okay, you studied several computer languages, right?
Mm-hmm.
Java.
I checked it out a little bit.
Okay. Each of those, each computer program or each computer language has a book that goes with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
We got a whole giant shelf of them right over there. The more complex the computer code is, probably the bigger the book would be to hold the information to explain the code to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a reasonable analogy?
Yeah.
I mean, to explain PowerPoint would require a certain size book to explain...
Depends on who's explaining it. Some people are real long-winded, and some people, they don't give enough information.
Right.
And some people, they do it just right.
So would it be reasonable to say with the DNA, which is the instructions to build the organism, that those with more instructions would be more complex? Or is somebody able to condense it down into fewer words?
Yeah, I don't know that necessarily more DNA would make you more complex. You know, what's all that stuff doing in there? They say, you know, that we have all this junk DNA right now that makes up a large portion of our genome, and it's not junk DNA like they're saying. If anything, it serves like a space between two words. If you had a book that all the spaces were taken out between the words or the coding parts of your DNA, then it'd be really hard to read that. You know, you wouldn't be able to tell where all these words are starting or finishing, or if there's two words
right.
here, if there's supposed to be three. to the spaces, I mean, even if they serve just the same function like that, then it's not junk DNA. I really don't think that more DNA you have, the more complex you are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure if it looked that way, then evolutionists would love to say that.
It's definitely not that way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what they have classified as simple organisms, i.e. single-celled, oftentimes have enormous amounts of DNA and enormous number of chromosomes.
Mm-hmm.
Amoebas have more chromosomes than man does.
Mm-hmm.
They have 50. We have 46. Now, maybe each chromosome is smaller. I don't know. Suppose it is discovered that amoebas not only have more chromosomes, they have more genes.
Mm-hmm.
Would the evolutionists then say, oh, wow, we were wrong? Or would they have any reason for it? Like a
no, they could just still say they acquired those genes somehow in the recent past, in the recent history, and it may not have always been like that, blah, blah, blah. It's just like Walter Remine says, they have a smorgasbord of alternatives, you know, ideas to go with. Doesn't matter what they see, they can figure out
right. Something
to explain it.
They're not going to give up on the theory.
Yeah.
No way.
They got a kung fu grip on irrational, you know, on being irrational.
Like that, when that soft tissue was found, dinosaur soft tissue, and they said, we have to reconsider how things fossilize. I said, you've got to be kidding. You cannot possibly be that stupid and have a college degree.
Yeah.
It's time to reconsider when they fossilized, not how they fossilized. They're not even willing to consider that the when part is wrong. You know, their geologic column. We have people call in here. We're talking about polystrate fossils, petrified trees standing up 30, 40 feet tall, petrified, standing up, running through hundreds of different layers. And yet they will still maintain those layers are different ages.
Mm-hmm.
How can somebody be that dumb?
I really have no idea. I know that if someone, you know, quote, smart, or someone, quote, educated, is dumb enough to believe it, then everybody else might really put their faith in that one person because he has a PhD or something. And then just without even considering it or considering the options, might just say, okay, well, if this guy believes it, then I'm going to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because Stephen Hawking believes that there's no God, and he's got a PhD, and he's, you know, one of the most brilliant physicists of our time, right, you know, in current day, well, then there must not be a God. A lot of people make that assumption, that problem right there.
Oh, well, that's why they need us, Jonathan. We're here. Okay, you can write in. Instant message is Dr. Dino Live at AOL, instant message, DrDinoLive, and we'll be glad to take your questions. Here we go from Cerebral Noise. Kale Burr writes, how do evolutionists explain the origin of heavy metals beyond iron? I don't know. Fusion takes place in stars where certain things can be fused together. I read an article once, Jonathan, did you see that on ICR, I believe, about you can fuse, you know, two hydrogens and get a helium,
mm-hmm.
but it's difficult to fuse three hydrogens to get a lithium, or
not
a hydrogen
maybe.
And a helium to get a lithium. There are certain places along the fusion chain, as you just keep squeezing these things together, you know, you can create higher, you know, heavier elements, that's true. But, number one, it takes an enormous amount of energy to do this. Okay, so your net result for the whole universe is you're losing something.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere, somebody's losing, okay? Second law is not being violated. So the star can take this, you know, takes this enormous amount of pressure and squeezes the hydrogens and makes some helium. Okay, fuses them together. All right, I'll go along with that. But as you go up the chain, you know, hydrogen, helium, lithium, certain parts are really hard to create. You know, it kind of skips over those. It would rather fuse two heliums and get four than to fuse a helium and a hydrogen to get three. There was a good article on that somewhere, and I should have written that down. Maybe somebody out there in data heaven here knows where that is and can find it for us. Okay.
We have a tank of helium if anyone wants to suck on some of that and talk real funny.
Oh, yeah, you talk real funny. Sounds cool. Hi, I'm breathing helium. You don't want to do it two or three breaths in a row, though. Trust me on that one, okay?
You start seeing little black things shooting around in front of you.
Yeah, you're not getting oxygen. You know, the helium's not hurting you,
mm-hmm.
but the lack of oxygen is hurting you.
Now, the helium, that's kind of light suppressor, unless it goes forward faster, isn't there? Like 9 10 something?
Yeah, make it darker, make it lower. I don't know if that can do it. We'll be back, folks, right after the break. Join us here. Thanks a lot. We'll be right back.
Learn of the diversity of religions next on today's Creation Moments. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
What is a religion? You might be tempted to answer that it is any kind of belief about God or some gods. However, that's not complete enough to cover all religions. There are many old religions, not to mention the new ones, that don't believe in any gods at all, in the traditional sense. Some religions even claim to be non-religious, because they reject any idea of God. Did you know that the Supreme Court has recognized the beliefs of the secular humanist as a religious expression covered under the Constitution's protection of religion? All of which is to say, there are many religions around today, some of which we forget are actually religions, and some pretend that they are not religions. If we do not see ourselves as creatures, we cannot recognize the Creator. If His values are not central in our lives, our own values will rule. If His definitions of who and what we are not part of our lives, we will make up our own definitions. This is exactly what many are doing today. There is no shortage of religious leaders to encourage them, no matter how outrageous their beliefs. As faithful children of our Creator, we need to understand the religions of our day.
You're listening to Truth Radio. Our address is Post Office Box 344, Nipomo, California. That's Post Office Box 344, N-I-P-O-M-O, Nipomo, California, 93444. Write to us. David Gibbs and his son gained some degree of prominence recently in the Terry Schiavo case, and they're good lawyers, and these people are very well-intentioned. They do a lot of good work. They send out a news release, a news letter. I got that letter. In it, David C. Gibbs, Jr. had this to say, and I want to comment on what he said. Our founders would wince at the idea that the Constitution they wrote is somehow living and thus open to interpretation based on the shifting sands of societal change. Wrong, Attorney Gibbs. Wrong. They would not wince. They knew when they wrote those words that unless they protected those words would change. And that's the problem with our nation today. We need to set those words in concrete and do away with the practice of looking to precedents as to being authoritative.
All right, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour. This is Jonathan Sampson here, July 21st, 2005, Pensacola, Florida, at Creation Science Evangelism. Typically, we have Dr. Hoven here with us, just now stepped out of the office just for a moment. So I'm going to go ahead and move on to our next little segment here, which is the case studies from ORI, the Office of Research Integrity, the Office of Scientific Research and Integrity, or something like that. This one here, this is a case study of Gary M. Kammer. And it says, summary, notice is hereby given that the Office of Research Integrity and the Acting Assistant Secretary for Health have taken final action in the following case. Let's see. This goes ahead and talks about how Gary M. Kammer did some pretty unaccepting things. So what is it? Scientific misconduct is what they call it.
Oh, no. You mean scientists would lie?
Oh, well, we got to call it misconduct, though. So
oh, misconduct.
It looks
okay,
nicer.
Yeah. He misspoke. Okay.
Yeah. Let's see. It says, Gary M. Kammer, MD, Wake Forest University. Based on the Wake Forest University investigation report, the respondent's admission, and the additional analysis conducted by ORI. Let's see. What just goes on here to say everyone who's involved? Let's see. Specifically, PHS found that the respondent fabricated families 2 and 3 in Figure 6, and related text in application 2R01, a bunch of little letters there, entitled T lymphocyte dysfunction and lupus erythematosus.
Got to use the big words.
Erythematosus.
So he fabricated his results from his scientific study?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. Now, surely no scientist is going to fabricate a study just for money. That would never happen. Not in America. The land of the free and the home of the slave. I mean, come on.
Well, we got a caller here. I guess we can ask Eric. What's your opinion on that?
I have not been tuning in.
Oh, okay.
I just called.
Well, we've been going through probably the past week or so. There's a website, a government website called ORI, the Office of Research Integrity. And they have tons and tons of cases on there of scientists and medical doctors. We just now did Gary M. Kammer, who fabricate their results to get more grant money. They lie.
Uh-huh.
So the point is, you know, that just because a guy's got a lab coat and a clipboard does not mean he's pure as the driven snow and you can believe everything he says. And
Okay.
some of these results are fabricated. And some of them don't get caught and end up being taught for years and years and years, like Piltdown Man.
Well, it's like
40
you say,
years.
You know, with the stars, these are the ones we know about. We don't know about the ones we don't know about.
Right.
You know, cases of people lying and doing scientific misconduct.
Yeah,
okay,
so Eric, check out.
You know, the same thing happens with anything you really have. I mean, like corporations, for instance, you know, there's shroud all over the place there. I mean, but, you know, there's still good scientists out there, the majority of them.
Hope so.
You still trust their findings. I mean,
yeah, see, and the ones that agree with me are the ones you should trust, okay?
Uh-huh.
All right, what's your question today?
Man, Ken. I don't know, you often scoff at the idea of land bridges. And,
what?
And you present anytime someone brings up a land bridge, you're like, oh, land bridges, that didn't happen. There was just a water level.
Land bridges? I don't know. I think actually you mentioned underwater land bridges in your seminar as a mode or a means for, you know, kangaroos to get to Australia and stuff like that.
Right. The water in Indonesia is only 30 or 40 feet deep in most places. So if you lower the ocean level 30 or 40 feet by raising the number of ice caps, you know, bigger ice caps, then you can walk to Australia.
So I think we love land bridges here. I'm in favor of
them. Covered for a lot in my video number 6. Anyway, go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, so you talked about the Tower of Babel and how people would spread away. And, but that really doesn't give an explanation of how, you know, animals would get from the Middle East to North America, let's say, or to Australia or Indonesia, without there being sufficient land bridge of some sort. Because
I stated in
the Bible that, you know, the water level was lower. Or you would think that the water level was lower before Noah and the flood.
No, after Noah got off the ark, the oceans were smaller, and consequently that makes the continents bigger, which is explained by because of the glaciers, larger ice caps.
What do you mean? You got off the boat and it was smaller. What do you mean?
Well, I'm looking at a map of National Pornographic here, showing the ocean floor. They've produced this over the years. Produced many. They stick their map in their magazine. Here's the ocean floor between Alaska and Russia, for instance, the Bering Strait.
Uh-huh.
The water's only 60 feet deep, you know, from here to the street.
Okay.
There's no question there's an underwater land bridge. I mean, 60 feet's enough for probably just about every ship we have in the Navy to make it through there, so it's not a problem. But 60 feet's not much when you figure the ocean is 12,000 feet deep average, okay? Mm-hmm. Average depth, 12,000 feet. 60 feet is all that we see, you know, in between Russia and Alaska. So the creationist viewpoint, which I give on my video 6, is probably after the flood, what we see is a continental shelf around all these continents used to actually be the beach line. And the oceans have come up because of ice melt. Ice caps have melted back. I mean, it's pretty obvious the ice was all the way down to Kansas City, Missouri. Most of Illinois is covered by ice during the Ice Age. And so as that huge amount of ice melted back, it's going to raise the ocean levels. And in addition to what's called isostatic rebound, where just the weight of the ice taken off allows the land to lift up a little bit, causing all the Kettle Lakes in Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the land between between Australia and Vietnam, around Vietnam, look at the ocean level. It's not very deep. I'm looking at a map here of National Geographic of Florida, actually of the whole North America. Man, between Florida and Cuba, there's a deep channel But you go from Tampa out toward Mexico, it's real shallow. You can walk out for a long ways. You could probably go out several hundred miles before it got to be 200 feet deep. There's a continental shelf around all the continents.
Now, do you see why this isn't really a sufficient explanation? Because just because there's a narrow band that kind of goes up by Alaska and Russia, how that doesn't explain how all the species that now live in North America got here. I can see all that perhaps would suffice for humans, but for all the species, that can't be.
Why not? Because if humans could walk there, why couldn't the other animals?
Because
there's a misconception, real quick. All the species that are here are not necessarily all the species that came here initially.
Yeah, some may not have survived.
And some of them, there may be new species today that didn't exist whenever the animals initially came over here. So,
speciation happens, you know. Wolves,
okay,
dogs, and coyotes.
All right.
But dog is a new species of the wolf. No species of the wolf family, okay?
Okay. But, you know, a lot of animals tend to stay around their a certain climate. And while birds could, you know, easily fly over to a new continent, what would, let's say, a squirrel, why would it go all the way up into a cold climate, follow along these trails to get into a new continent? I mean, you know, all these, I mean, you got, like, elk. They're herd animals. They would eventually, you know, unlike the woolly mammoth, would eventually do it. But, you know, you got all these small mammals. You got these tropical climate lizards. I mean, why would they go north at all, ever?
Well, you're assuming, of course, that north meant cold all through the last 4,400 years. I don't think you could prove that. That, you know, the climate obviously has changed radically. Why do they find redwood tree stumps up in Axel Island near the North Pole?
Or why do they find palm trees in Antarctica, as you mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't always cold, obviously.
Then why do you call the Pangaea theory bogus?
Well, it's different to say the continents are connected right this minute. While we're standing here, sitting here, North America is connected to Europe. It just so happens it's underwater. The connection is underwater.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the oceans have a bottom to them, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The Earth has a solid crust. So it is bogus to say that the shapes of the continents means anything. My neighbor's house and my house would fit perfectly if we split them together.
I mean, all along that reasoning, yes. But the whole Pangaea theory explains a lot in terms of how everything came to be. I mean, if you found a palm tree in Antarctica, that doesn't mean it's ice resistant. As you said, it probably means that the climate was different there.
I agree.
Therefore, palm trees could have survived.
I agree. But that doesn't mean Antarctica moved into that position. That's one option.
You see continents moving today.
I disagree. I think we see a little bit of movement along fault lines. You know, there's no question. I taught her science 15 years. You know, there is movement along fault lines, but it is so minuscule. For instance, after 8 years of watching the Mid-Atlantic Ridge for spreading by measuring the distance between America and Europe, bouncing a laser off a satellite, they saw zero movement in 8 years, and then the satellite fell out of parking orbit, is my understanding. And so they concluded, well, because of atmospheric twinkle, you know, light shining a light through the atmosphere, it causes the light to bend a little bit, 0.046 arc seconds is called atmospheric twinkle. The continents might have moved 3 inches, and we wouldn't have seen it. So they allowed the maximum possible movement of 3 inches in 8 years, and then said, okay, well, it's so many miles across the ocean, that proves it spread for so many million years. I think the evidence for continental drift is a little shaky. I mean, it's probably true, but I think, you know, it's worth arguing about. Secondly, there's not enough time, okay?
Well, you think there's enough time.
Right.
At least presented by the Bible.
Well, see, right, and that's where, again, the evolutionist calls on their god of time to come in and solve the problem.
Well, I mean, time is kind of required for a lot of these things to happen. I mean, there's no doubt in that, but, yeah, that's my second thing I wanted to talk about is how on earth is evolution a religion at all?
Because you have to believe in so many things that are not observable.
Okay, but there's still evidence, just like the planets. Now, you called believing in a lot of, or more than 9 planets, a religion. because you have to believe that they are there, right?
Sure.
But we have four ways, even maybe more, of evidence that supports the idea and common logic that states what else could they really be and why wouldn't they be planets?
What are the evidences that are making you think there are planets around these stars?
Well, first of all, you see planets are on our stars, nine of them, okay?
Right.
Now, why wouldn't you think that there would be more out there if there are nine revolving around our star?
Okay, we see a moon going around our planet.
Uh-huh.
Why wouldn't we think there are moons around all the planets? Well, because...
Well, we see one around ours. You would think that there would be more moons out there, and there are. So I don't...
But wait. But there aren't moons around Mercury or Venus.
Well, you're not going to find it everywhere, but you're going to still find more moons, and there are moons out there, especially around...
Okay. We find liquid water on our planet. Why wouldn't we assume liquid water would be on all the planets?
Well, different planets have different atmospheres, and so you would think that some planets would have liquid water, some planets wouldn't. But
we're the only one that does.
Well, in our solar system, but
right.
You present a planet that revolves around, like, let's say, the same distance that ours does. Why wouldn't it have liquid water?
Well, there's hundreds of factors that cause us to be able to have life here. Life only exists in a really narrow band in the galaxy, first of all. The sun has to be in the kind of protected between two arms of the galaxy where our sun apparently is. It also has to be a certain distance from the center of the galaxy because traffic is really busy as you get close to the center of the galaxy, and we're out in one of the spiral arms. So there's a very narrow band around a galaxy where life is possible. There's a very narrow band between the arms of the stars where life is possible.
Well, you're talking about all, let's say, our life is possible. I mean, you don't perhaps know that life couldn't possibly exist on Mars or never could. I mean.
So are you a Star Trek fan?
Oh, I kind of watched a show a while back, but no.
Okay.
Really.
Or, you know, Lost in Space or one of those. Yes, this... The whole point would be, I mean, I've seen a lot of those shows, and they're very interesting, but all of that would be something based on faith, a belief, not observable science.
Well, no, I mean, you present trillions of planets. You would think that at least it seems logical that given time, life could evolve. It could. You have the recipe of, the amino acids in liquid water, once you perhaps say over enough time that might form DNA?
The problem, though, man, you haven't shown how it works on our planet by itself.
And amino acids in water,
I mean,
they dissolve, they hydrolyze, they fall apart, they don't bond together.
You can look at a chemist paper on trueorigin.org that's talking about the polymerization problem with water and how it breaks that stuff down. But, I mean, if you can show how life evolved on Earth, and then I'm more than happy to, agree with you that maybe it can happen out there as well.
No,
but
the thing is,
until you show how it happened on Earth or give a plausible scientific explanation for it, then it's just hand-waving to say, well, it happened out there. I mean, you don't even know how it can happen here yet.
Well, no, I'm not saying it does happen out there, but I'm saying that given all these planets, you'd think that perhaps on one of them, namely this planet, that it happened.
No, because then you're assuming that it can happen.
Well, don't you think it's at least possible that it could?
No.
I mean, you believe in a God. I say, it's possible that a God exists. Why wouldn't it be possible for perhaps life to evolve on its own?
You're talking about something building itself with no intelligence whatsoever.
Uh-huh. It's kind of random.
It's not going to happen. I mean, if I blindfolded you and painted one grain of sand red and threw it on some beach somewhere in the world, do you think really you're going to find that grain of sand being blindfolded, that one red piece of sand?
You give trillions of planets where the same person is looking for the same
sand. I'll give you, 400 trillion chances to find this grain of sand. Do you really think you're going to do it?
Well, if you give so many trillion chances, sure. Why not?
Okay, well, because every time you go to do it, your chances are insanely small,
okay,
practically non-existent.
So you still have many galaxies.
No, if you have one chance in 400 trillion to the 400 trillionth power, for you to even say, well, maybe I'll get it, it's just ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
That's why it takes enormous faith.
We don't really have one chance. I mean, we have a large time scale to work with here.
There you go. There's your God again.
Okay. Okay. But that's not really religion, because we have evidence that perhaps the Earth is millions of years old. And
we also have a lot of evidence that it's not. I mean, if you watch my seminar part one, there is no date on any rock you dig out of your yard, so it's an interpretation that gets put on these things. That's obvious. And there's other interpretations.
Uh-huh.
Example, the moon is...
At least you could argue that perhaps like DNA is for some creator. I mean, I'd spend time arguing that a different day, but, I mean, it presents evidence for a theory that states that we all come from a common ancestor. I mean, that you have to agree there.
Well, that's you interpret the evidence to read that.
Okay.
I would agree dogs and wolves would have a common ancestor, and maybe tigers and lions had a common ancestor, but that does not mean that lions and dogs have a common ancestor.
Yes, but all living things have pretty much DNA. And
sure. I would agree. All living things have DNA.
So don't you think that perhaps the modern, you know, like say humans, could not have evolved using, you know, having DNA and...
The DNA code is so incredibly complex.
Uh-huh.
Just as an analogy, I've got, I don't know how many thousands of books in this library I'm sitting in here doing our radio broadcast. To my knowledge, all of them are written in English, okay? I may have a few French or Spanish ones here. But there's a code called alphabet, 26 letters, with which you write English. Now, you can combine those letters and make literally trillions of combinations of sentences. We'll be back after the break and let's discuss this. So hang on, folks. We'll be back in just a minute.
If you're like me, you believe the FBI has never apologized, never had any thoughts of regret about Ruby Ridge. Well, here's FBI negotiator Fred Lansley. Hear what he says.
We fouled up in front of the entire world, and it should never have happened. And I think it was just a really disappointing day for the FBI.
The FBI later admits to covering up facts during the court case, and the rules of engagement are deemed unconstitutional.
Well, the FBI may not have officially apologized for what went on at Ruby Ridge, but it was impressive to hear Fred Lansley speak out against his bosses. That's almost never done. This DVD, new to me, is really great. Lots of good background information about the Weaver case, and Randy himself showing up and telling his story. You can have a copy if you write to me, P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, 93444.
Mr. Johnson, let me explain this again. Your mortgage is $1,000.
And I sent you two $500 bills.
That was Monopoly money. Just like the 1,000 Bongo Burger Bucks you sent last month, they're not worth anything.
Excuse me, but you can buy one fry and get another free.
Mr. Johnson, we only accept real money.
Monopoly money, Bongo Bucks, dollar bills, they're all the same. Come on, they all have dollar signs on them.
They may all claim to be a form of payment, but only one of them has value here.
That is so narrow. You know, if everyone was just a little more open to different forms of payment, we would all be a lot richer.
The truth is, you need to use real money or you will lose your home.
There comes a point in life when we have to deal with reality. Believing what you want to believe about God may feel good during your lifetime, but in the end, only truth will matter. Make sure what you believe is true. A message from Lifeline Productions, 1-800-523-8669, lifelinepro.com.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind, Jonathan Sampson. It's July 21st of 2005, and we're here. DrDino.com is our main site, DinosaurAdventureland.com, secondary site, and our amazing theme park, Dinosaur Adventureland. You can come visit there. We're the folks who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate. The evolution theory is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth, and we're taking your calls at 850-479-DINO, 850-479-DINO, extension 136. Or instant message us, AOL instant message, Dr. Dino Live. And we have on the phone with us our future convert, Eric. Is that right?
No.
That's not right?
Also, hey. I wanted to state something. You said, like, Carl Sagan said that there should have been lots and lots of feet of cosmic dust on the moon.
Correct. In 1959, Carl Sagan wrote a book and said that I get a vision of the... I'll read the quote to you. Have you seen my quote on that?
No.
Okay. Get my videotape number one, where I...
Kent.
Yes.
You fail to realize that I've said many times I'd take you up on your $20 offer to pay me to watch the videos, and you have never sent me them. And
I've got to pay for the videos, too?
No, you said you would send me the videos. I would watch them. You'd pay me $10, $20, and then I'd give the videos back.
Okay. I'll tell you what. The first two are right online. Watch those two. Call me when you're done. Okay? Here's the article. Oh, I'm sorry. It's Carl Sagan. It's Isaac Asimov. I don't know if I said Carl Sagan. Asimov.
You said Carl Sagan.
Did I say about the dust?
You did.
Well, I'm sorry. I stand corrected then. It's Isaac Asimov. Who said in Science Digest, January 1959, on page 36. Now, keep in mind, this is 10 years before anybody went to the moon, as far as we know. Isaac Asimov said, I get a picture, therefore, of the first spaceship picking out a nice level place for landing purposes, coming in slowly downward, tail first, and sinking majestically out of sight. So he, indeed, thought there was going to be some huge layer of dust on the moon.
Okay, so... What we do observe today is kind of a thin layer of cosmic dust, and that's why, you know, footprints are observed. But I remember I was listening to I don't remember if it's debate, but the man stated that he actually talked to Carl Sagan, and Carl Sagan gave him the current I believe it was.
Dust
formula of all the dust that's collected on the moon, and it goes perfectly with 4.6 billion years.
Now, is this just word of mouth, or is Carl Sagan's stuff actually published somewhere that shows 4.6 billion years gave him the right answer?
Yeah, I was actually looking at the internet today. You should be able to type in something like moon dust accumulation or... So, something like that. I forget the exact words, but the Talk Origins has something on that.
Well, okay. The moon dust argument, I think, has... I don't use it in my seminar, other than when it comes up during Q&A, I mention. Certainly, they did fear a great layer of dust before they went. After they went, then they had to revise the calculations and say, it's not enough, because still had to fit the theory. But here's a quote here from... Walt Brown, PhD in physics, Air Force Academy professor for years, retired colonel from the Air Force, who says, and I quote, in 1981, I had a conversation with Dr. Herbert Zook, Z-O-O-K, of the U.S. National Aeronautics Space Administration, NASA. He had been intimately involved in estimating the thickness of the dust layer on the moon before the first Apollo landing. He also helped analyze the lunar material brought back from the moon. One of the many interesting things he told me and sent me by mail, is one is critical in answering the question about the moon dust. NASA did not realize until the moon dust and rocks were analyzed that only 1.5% of the debris on the moon actually came from outer space. The rest was pulverized moon rock. In hindsight, this makes perfect sense. Meteorites that strike the moon travel about 7 times faster than a bullet, averaging 20 kilometers per second. When they strike the moon, they are not slowed down by an atmosphere like they are on Earth because the moon has no atmosphere. Therefore, the projectile, regardless of size, instantaneously vaporizes and kicks up a cloud of pulverized moon rock. The vaporized meteorite then condenses on the pulverized moon rocks. This was determined by slicing moon rocks and finding them coated by meteoric material rich in nickel. Uncoated moon rocks have practically no nickel. NASA arrived at the factor of 1.5%. Basically, what this is saying is only 1.5% of the moon dust is actually from space. So this makes the problem actually worse for the evolutionist. Based on the actual measured accumulation by the plates left behind to collect moon dust, it should have been 2.7 inches per million years.
You can go to Walt Brown. His website is creationscience.com. And in his book, I have it on page 212, but there might be an old edition. Just look up moon dust. And 2.7 per million years is still a lot slower than they thought. They thought it was an inch every 1,000, or 10,000.
How does it only accumulate the dust from that outers? I mean, well, explain that again. How does it collect the dust? You said only 1.5% is accumulated from outer space?
Yeah, the rest, I mean, as this particle comes in and hits, it knocks a dust cloud up from the Earth, which resettles down, so it's loosening up surface rocks.
I mean, not from the Earth,
from the moon, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So it's knocking up material from the moon that is resettling, of course, and so there's a dust layer on the moon, but only 1.5% of that is from space, which if there's only a half-inch layer of dust on the moon, which there is, and 98.5% of that is regurgitated moon rock already, this makes the problem much worse for the evolutionists who would like the moon to be billions of years old.
I'll look into that.
Check it out. Secondly, as far as the moon goes, the moon is a very different composition than the Earth. If it's all formed from a Big Bang, why would the moon be such a high percentage of silica compared to the Earth? Why would all the planets be very different compositions? I mean, you'd think they'd all be very similar in their, you know, what they're made out of, but they're not. Look into that one, too, would you?
Well, I mean, but also, the whole religion thing, I still don't, I mean, they, you know, like, maybe perhaps, never mind, yeah, the whole religion thing, Ken. You got to stop calling evolution religion. It's clearly supported by a lot of facts and evidence.
Okay, would you stop calling Christianity a religion?
Well, no, because
it's supported by all kinds of facts.
In a supernatural force.
No, it's supported by all kinds of facts. 500 people claim they saw Jesus after he rose from the dead.
Well, the claim isn't really a fact.
Okay, look at these disciples.
You look at, well, if you want hard stuff, you can look at the stuff like the Wyatt Museum, things that they do, archaeological facts for the Bible. You can go to the tomb itself. There's an archaeological fact right there. You can go all over the place. There's, was it Hal Lindsey, I believe, was doing a special TV program just on archaeological facts and remnants found from the Bible. There was some king in the Bible, and they actually found this king's ring that had his inscription of his name on there.
Okay,
so
if
this is the type of stuff that you're saying are hard facts, then quit calling Christianity a religion.
It is a religion because you believe in a supernatural force that creates everything.
Okay, so regardless if there's hard facts that back it up, it's still religion.
Okay, no, Eric?
Well, the hard facts, you find a king's ring and all of a sudden that means that everything in the Bible is truth? Is that
the king's ring the only thing I said?
He's got a good point. But evolution, you need to look just as critically at evolution because there may be a few facts. I mean, it's a fact that dogs produce a variety of puppies, but are you interpreting that beyond the accepted, you know, interpretation to include that dogs and bananas are related somehow?
I'll tell you this, Kent. You once said that I was one of the people who believe evolution was part of science, and yes, I do, and I don't see how you couldn't, but... that's what makes evolution part of science, is because you can always change things in it and interpret it differently when you find new evidence. And yes, you have to look at it critically, and that's what everyone always does.
Well,
you have to look at evolution critically.
I wish you would. You're not looking at it critically. You just accept it.
No.
And sure,
I look at it. Why do you think I listen to your show?
Oh, well, and I appreciate that. But see, you do believe a lot of things by faith that are never observed.
Well, I believe it because there's fact support, or maybe not facts, but evidence, let's say, that supports it.
That's the same reason why I believe Christianity.
Like evidence that supports there are other planets out there in the solar system, or out there in the universe.
Well, that's right. We, you know, there may be other planets in the universe. I don't know, and I've never said there aren't. I'm just saying there's no proof that there is.
Well, there's not proof, but there's very strong evidence.
It wouldn't even be classified as the same type of evidence. If we look out there and we see a star wobbling, and let's just assume there's a planet going around that or something like that that's pulling on it, when is that planet existing? Right now?
Yeah, if it's so many million light years away, it's apparently, you know...
Well, I mean, what they want to do, they want to say, well, we can look out and see a star wobbling. There must be a planet out there, which is the same thing as saying a bird turned in, or a dinosaur turned into a bird 65 million years ago. It's two completely different types of fields.
Well, somewhat, yeah, but I mean...
Whenever you look out there and see a star...
You're trying to change my argument. I'm
no,
just
no,
saying that
this is what you're
evidence,
saying here.
There's evidence for this stuff, but not... You know, 100% proof.
That's
I mean,
fine, but even the evidence itself is so completely different.
Okay, yeah. Well, yes, it's different things, but I'm just saying that...
It's enormously different.
Okay, but I'm trying to make different arguments, and I'll see where you're going with that, Jonathan.
Well, I'm saying if you're wanting to say that we should believe evolution because we can look out and see stars wobbling and therefore planets are most likely there because it's not exactly direct evidence, we're not looking at the planet, we're looking at the effects of it. I'm saying those two things are not even close to being comparable because if we're looking at a star wobbling, we are actually seeing it happen. You know, if I put my finger beneath a blanket and I start moving my finger around, you're actually seeing the effects of my finger moving around if my finger is there right as you're watching it. If you want to say that this is just like saying a dinosaur evolved into a bird 65 million years ago, then you've just made a huge leap because you cannot see any indirect evidence. Or you can't see any operational science that says the dinosaur turned into a bird.
Well, you can see fossils and see how they changed, at least. And
well, you're assuming that they're changing. Unless you see something taking place.
Well, things do change.
We know that, yeah.
But
the change that we see is not the same type of change you're trying to infer from the fossils.
You're not going to because it does take time.
Okay, well, if you cannot see something happening, then how are you calling it scientific to say it did happen?
Because we do see it, the fossils.
But do you see them changing like
that?
Do you see fossils changing like you say they do in the fossil record?
Sure.
You do?
Sure.
You see creatures turning into completely different types of creatures today?
No, you see fossils and you infer a connection between them.
And
okay.
Even if you're...
Well, that makes perfect sense.
Now, hold on. Even if you're right...
That conclusion?
Even if you're right that the Earth has been around for billions of years, you still do not see the types of changes that you would need to today to lead you to assume that those types of changes in the fossil record that a theropod dinosaur... turn into Archaeopteryx.
Let's just take humans, for example. You do find a lot of fossils that present that humans were more ape-like, and you do see kind of a connection there.
When you find a creature that you consider more ape-like, why would you consider that's ancestral to humans at all? Maybe that's ancestors to hamsters.
Well, because we're, you know, humans and apes, I don't know, it's a 5% difference. I mean, it's the closest thing that we are to in the animal kingdom.
That's where your faith, your religion comes in again.
Why? Well, we are pretty similar.
Well, cars and trucks are pretty similar, too. It doesn't prove any relationship. Common designer, maybe.
Well, what do cars and trucks have to do with... Well, I mean, I'm just saying that humans are the most similar to apes in the animal kingdom. We're both mammals. We both have almost the same organs.
Well, it depends what you're comparing
now. Body functions.
If you're comparing IQ, I don't know if that you can measure these things, but some people say a dolphin is probably smarter than a chimp and closer.
I believe they are smarter than chimps.
Okay, well, then why would you compare just simply general appearance? Why don't we compare, you know, why do chimps have more DNA than we do? It's, you know, 48 chromosomes. Tobacco also has 48 chromosomes. I mean, they're identical twins.
Well, that's where my knowledge ceases. I believe, you know, Jared has actually debated you on that many times and won. But the thing is, Ken, why wouldn't we compare physical comparison? Or why wouldn't we compare physical, you know, appearances when comparing these things?
Well, why don't we compare just simple body size and say that of the mammals, the shrew was the first one to evolve and the whale, blue whale, was the last one to evolve? Why don't we compare life expectancy, how long they live? Why don't we compare speed, how fast can they run? So the snail is the first one to evolve, and the peregrine falcon is the highest species on Earth. Why don't we compare gestation period? You know? There's a lot of things you could compare. You're picking one that you think supports your theory. I'm saying there's 10,000 other ways to compare this, and you're not even willing to look at those.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, physical characteristics such as, you know, just general appearance, we are the most ape-like, and that's I don't see where you're going with this. I mean, you know, okay. Chimps have kind of a relative high IQ along any type of other animal. They have body hair just like us, so we have the lungs and all the general body functions. I mean,
okay,
if
what,
you find more ape-like humans, then why wouldn't you kind of
have
evidence that we came from apes?
Well, that's an inference. You're inferring that. That's not
there's
science.
There's strong evidence that supports it.
No, no. That's,
and that's not a religion.
It's not science. It's something you believe, which is a religion. Nobody sees apes today.
Well, I mean, it's not a religion. It's perfect science. Science, we have to take inferences. Just, I mean, this is where I keep coming back to. You have to make inferences, just like the planets are out there revolving around suns when you see the wild ones.
All right. Well, this is going nowhere. We got a lot of other people wanting to get on the program here, but any final comments?
Well, it's not going anywhere. I mean, I'm just showing that it's not a religion. There's complete evidence that supports all these things, and I still don't see how you can call it a religion just because you believe something that has perfect evidence that supports it.
Well, and I don't see how you can't see that it's a religion because
I can see your argument pretty simple, but it's pretty stupid.
Well, you need to get a program, and you can announce that when you start off your program like we do.
Is that your argument, then? I should get my own program and say that?
Well, I mean, after all, this is our program, and we're paying for this. So, yeah, we can say what we want. This is America,
okay.
You know.
Well, you can say it, but it's still stupid.
Yeah, well, you can believe that it's stupid. I think evolution
I know
is stupid.
It's stupid because I've been listening to your program for such a long time now.
And we appreciate that. Okay.
All right. See you, Ken.
We'll call in tomorrow. Thanks.
All right.
Thank you, folks. Sorry for waiting so long. Here you go. Some of you have questions here. England, Canada, 999. And if you want to get on the program, folks, instant message us, Dr. Dino Live. DrDinoLive. And we'll be back after the break. Sorry about that.
Millions of people in Southeast Asia, December 26th will never be forgotten. The tsunami that hit 11 countries devastated millions of lives that will take decades to rebuild. Many of you have already donated money to help the needy. Lifeline, America's most trusted Christian telecom company, has another way for you to help. No, we're not asking for donations. We're simply asking you to take what you already use, internet service, and put your daily web surfing to work, changing lives. Call and switch to Lifeline Internet now. Get fast, filtered surfing for as little as $9.95 per month and help places such as Indonesia, Sri Lanka, and Thailand while the doors are open so wide. At Lifeline, we donate a portion of your internet bill to relief ministries that you choose, and we've been doing it for almost 15 years.
Phone 1-800-311-2418. Your participation with Lifeline will help Truth Radio. 800-311-2418.
When life throws you a curve.
Bottom of the third, here's the 2-2 fastball. It's deep to center.
It's a home run. Here's Rise Above with Rob Rosenblum.
How can pride be bad when society constantly screams, you got to have it to make it? I've met some rather prideful people, and to me, they've got a long ways to go before they make it. It's the generous and humble that I believe succeed. C.S. Lewis once said, the first step to humility is to realize you are proud. The Bible tells us in Proverbs that pride comes before the fall. Have you done a self-evaluation lately to see if pride has been getting in the way? If you're like me, it's a daily checkup. Rise above and do a checkup from the neck up.
Rise Above with Rob Rosenblum is a production of Rise Ministries at RiseMinistries.com and is made possible by Rob's alma mater, Northwestern College, a distinctly Christian liberal arts college in Orange City, Iowa. Visit nwciowa.edu.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Sorry where it took so long here on the call, but we're going to win that guy to the Lord, or try to win him over. I think the Lord loves everybody and wants everybody to come to heaven forever. Okay, so you're welcome to call in. 850-479-DINO, 850-479-3466, or instant messages, Dr. Dino Live. Here we are. England, Canada, 999 writes in, supernatural, attributed to a power that seems to violate or go beyond natural forces. Evolution,
Rocks to rock stars. This cannot happen through natural laws. Therefore, evolutionists must believe in the supernatural. Huh, good point. Evolution, rocks to rock stars. This cannot happen through natural... Okay, we said that already. All right, same message twice. Good point. Okay. Rocks to rock stars. I don't know if that's an advancement or a decline, Jonathan. Going from a rock to a rock star probably is actually a negative. They're going downhill.
But they get the ability to talk.
Yeah, but it's dumb stuff they're saying. I mean, you ought to write down the words to some of these rock and roll songs and just read them, you know, without the lyrics, without all the hype. Just, it's dumb, most of it, or real wicked, a lot of it. Anyway, here we go. Buzz UK 234, listening from England, apparently, says, Dear Dr. Ovin, I've had this question answered by many speakers and pastors, but they have missed the issue. How do you explain natural disasters, earthquake, tidal waves, etc.? As surely God is omnipresent, he is within nature. So why would he allow nature to destroy the people he loves, as the Bible says, wishes that none would perish? Ooh, let's see. God is not willing that any perish. Okay. I'm not relating to personal sin and how our own sin affects us directly, but natural disasters on their own accord. What's your take on this, Joe Burrows, UK? Joe, we have problems and sin, pain and suffering in the world, I guess, for multiple reasons. One of the reasons is this is a decaying, dying planet, okay, and we're living on it. So there's just natural... There are problems that happen. Jesus himself got tired, he got thirsty, he got hungry, he was in pain when they pounded a nail in his arms, you know, and poked, well, not when he poked the spear in his side, but there's natural suffering that just comes with being human and living on a dying planet, a cursed planet, okay? You have to work hard, you have to sweat, probably sweat 3 gallons today out there in Dinosaur Adventure Land. So there's natural suffering. There is suffering as a result of man's sin. There's also kind of a corporate-type suffering where the whole country, the whole nation can suffer. I mean, individual people in countries are suffering because of decisions their leaders have made. Sometimes you can suffer because of somebody else's sin, like, for instance, some idiot over there with a diaper on his head in England will blow up a train and, you know, kill a bunch of innocent people in a tunnel, okay? Well, that's they're suffering because of his sin, okay? But as far as natural disasters, earthquakes, tsunamis, tidal waves, etc., we are on a dying planet. And if somebody builds their house near an earthquake zone and then an earthquake happens and their house falls down and they die, I don't think they should necessarily blame God for that. If you live in a hurricane zone like we do and a hurricane comes, it's just a natural result of the weather patterns from the hot air coming off of Africa creating... You know, spinning wind currents go across the ocean and sometimes develop into hurricanes, and they blow your tree down on your son's house, and you cut your leg with a chainsaw trying to get the tree off, and you have a scar the rest of your life. Okay, that's...
Chain reaction.
Chain, literally. Chain reaction.
Yeah.
So, it's true God could, I guess, if he wanted to, control any of those things and stop it all. But then we'd already be living in paradise, and we wouldn't be looking forward to anything, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the earth had. The earth had the Garden of Eden conditions. Man rejected God's government over them. God said, don't eat off the tree. Satan said, eat off the tree. They made a decision. And, you know, they gave up God's government over them. And, okay, well, then God says, oh, have it your way then, you know.
I don't think these atheists really see the paradox that they want to create either. They always say, well, why doesn't God stop people from doing bad things? Or, you know, why did God let 9/11 happen? They just don't understand it. Man is supposed to have free will. If God were to stop those planes from hitting the trade centers, then he's stopping man's free will, which means he's no longer a just God, or, you know, a good God for giving man free will. Now he's creating robots. So then if he did that, then they're just going to switch their argument from why didn't God stop good things from stop bad things from happening, and they're going to switch it to, well, how come God takes away people's free will?
Right.
It doesn't matter. I mean, there's no possible way you could make the atheist happy.
We're going to try, though, Jonathan. I enjoy trying. I enjoy showing, because I've had thousands of them, thousands of people who've watched our videotapes or tune in our radio program or come to my seminars who have become converted.
Mm-hmm.
So
We are winning tens of thousands, actually. Okay. So there are some you don't get first try. I understand. Okay. When you mow the grass, sometimes you don't get them all. You got to go back and pick out the stragglers.
Well, somebody sent Heath Reed, the web developer for Dinosaur Venture Land, they sent him an MP3 today of their testimony, and it was a physician who got saved listening to your material, and it was a speech he gave at his church.
Hmm.
And it was really awesome because the guy, I guess, is a degreed physician, very, very smart guy, and I was giving a lecture about how he got saved watching your videos, how they just opened up a whole world to him.
Wow, awesome. So it's true we don't get them all. You have to dig through many tons of dirt to get a diamond.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know what the ratio is, pound for pound, but it's millions to one. Okay.
Of course, today you can have your loved ones turned into diamonds. Have you ever seen that?
Take the ashes and compress them into a diamond.
Life, it's lifegem.com. You can turn your loved ones, your pets, your monkey, your brother, your sister into a diamond.
Do you have to wait until they die? Or do you?
You could probably do it before. It just wouldn't be as clean, I don't think.
Okay. So our dog, Nicky, we should have made a diamond out of him, put him in the museum.
Do you know where he's at?
No, we took him to the vet. He was standing at death's door, and we asked the doctor to pull him through, or push him through, or whatever they do. So they gave him the magic shot, you know.
We had a toy Pomeranian for about 9-10 years, and then it was Little Bit was his name, and he died. I don't think you'd get a whole diamond out of him.
Just a little speck.
Yeah.
Diamond dust. Wow. So you can turn your left one into a diamond now.
Yeah, actually, that was featured in one of Creation magazines not too long ago, and they were talking about people who inspect these diamonds say you can't even hardly tell the difference from naturally formed diamonds.
So you can't see their face or fingernails or anything else on them anymore?
No, I don't think that's it.
Okay, good. All right. Interesting. All right, here we go. A Crowdster fan writes in, "Hey, Kent, I was glancing at the most recent ICR Impact article. It is about genomics. Having just graduated from University of Madison with a microbiology degree, it was very interesting to me, and I suggest you take a look. It talks about the similarity between humans and chimps and how by crunching the numbers, it is not possible at all for us to have a common ancestor with them." Impact article number 385.
Yep, just like the RATE project that they're doing right now, they're supposed to be releasing the layman's version of the RATE result this year. They're going to be starting a new one called GENE, G-E-N-E, and they have, it's an acronym for something, I can't remember what it was, though, and it's going to be just like the RATE project, with focus more on microbiology and genetics and stuff
cool.
like that.
Cool. They put out a lot of good stuff, ICR.org, okay? Okay, Crowdster fan had also written me several days ago, and I don't think I ever got a chance to answer it, so let me answer it while he's listening here. He says, "With all the suicide bombings happening every day all over the world, I'm really beginning to question the value of Islam religion at all. Christianity as well as Judaism seem to at least tolerate other views, but Muslims seem to think the only way they will get noticed is by killing others." I agree. Okay? How ironic. Ironic how the people in charge of the Muslim faith aren't killing themselves, but instead sending others. It's really quite infuriating how they treat women also. I agree. He goes on to say, "Do you propose we deal with all the suicide bombing nonsense, which seems to be the extension of Islamic jihad? It seems Islam is, unlike Judaism or Christianity, very intolerant of other views, and they just want to take over the world." Well, that is exactly correct. That's what their religion requires them to do. If a person had a dreaded disease, Jonathan, suppose somebody moved into this community, and we knew he had a highly infectious disease. This is just smallpox as an example,
contagious,
which is probably cured. But, okay.
Yeah, that's contagious.
It's a highly contagious disease, okay? An incurable, contagious disease. All of the people in the community would say, "Hey, how about let's quarantine this guy and keep him in his house, and everybody keep an eye on him, and if he comes out of the house, arrest him and put him in jail." Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That'd be logical, right? He's quarantined.
Or keep him at the hospital. Yeah.
Or someplace.
Yeah.
Isolate him. Keep him away from people. Okay? When somebody has a religion that says, we are required to kill anybody who won't convert, you have to isolate those people.
Mm-hmm.
If you really want to believe that, go stand in your country, and if you cross this border, I'm going to shoot you. Okay, if you come into my country, I'm going to shoot you. You're not allowed here.
Yeah. We'll play your guys' game. You know.
I don't know that that's the solution. I'm just saying that's something we should consider. You know,
well, there was you told me a story once about there was some area that was having a problem with Muslims.
Oh, Philippines.
Was that? Yeah.
The Philippines in early 1900s. I don't remember who was American, who was general over there, but the Muslims were, you know, terrorists were blowing things up and killing people, and so they captured. I think it was 50 of these terrorists. Okay. The American leader, I don't remember, I can get the details somewhere, I'm sure, he tied all 50 of them up to stakes out in the jungle to shoot them. Okay. Mm-hmm. But they were all tied up to these stakes and said, we're going to execute you because of what you did. Okay. But before he did that, they dug a big pit in front of these guys, brought in a couple of pigs, killed the pigs, put all the blood in the pit, threw the dead pigs in the pit. All the soldiers went up and dipped their rifle bullets in the pig blood, put them in their gun to shoot these guys. Okay,
because the Muslims have some Old Testament like belief.
Right, they teach if you touch a pig or get pig blood in you in any way, you are damned to hell forever. You cannot go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Now, see, they believe if you die in the cause of Allah, you know, if you go blow up a Christian or a Jew, then you go to heaven and get 72 wives strapped to, you know, chained to their couch, calling for you, please come over to me next, you know. But if you get pig blood in you, man, you go to hell, okay?
Yeah.
So they were all excited about doing their jihad over there in the Philippines, you know, blowing up bridges and killing people, because, man, if I get killed, I'm going to go to heaven. So this American general, or whoever he was, had all the soldiers in the firing squad dip their bullets in the pig blood, put them in their gun, bang, 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 shot 49 of them, took them off their stake, and threw them in the pit with the pigs, and buried them, and let the last guy go. Well, he goes screaming off into the jungle, telling everybody else, "Don't, no more terrorists, you know, don't do this, you know. These 49 brave soldiers went to hell, you know, forever and ever with the pig's blood on them." So,
my goodness.
There's no question that's what I would do, I think, if I had the opportunity, was in charge, you know. That's what you got to deal with them with the way they understand.
Well, the problem, too, is you got, you know, poor President Bush, he gets up there and says that this is a peace religion.
You got to read their book. It's not a peaceful religion.
I don't know who his counsel
is. I'm not anti-Muslim, okay? I think all these people need to be converted.
Mm-hmm.
And we have given many videotapes to bases, to even to prisons, and many Muslims get saved. I mean, I want them all to be saved. But as long as they're dedicated Muslims, they got to be quarantined because their religion requires them to kill anybody who won't convert.
Mm-hmm.
You just, that's like a contagious disease, okay? You're not going to fix it in the short term.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly by coddling them, you're not going to fix it, you know?
There was a story that came through the email. This Muslim was in the prison. You know, he got a special mat, got special foods because of his religious beliefs. That our tax dollars are going towards, you know, paying this criminal,
sure,
to get a special mat, special food in this prison. And then he flips out whenever apparently some American soldier kicked the Quran when he was over in Iraq.
Well, if somebody would have kicked the Bible in Iraq, they would all rejoice.
Yeah, well,
they'll burn the Bible. They'll shoot
the
Christian.
It was like that email was saying, you can't even have a Bible in Saudi Arabia. They're going to kill you if you look like you have one. I mean, is that really the tolerance? They come over here barking about tolerance and how the Christians don't tolerate them. And this is ridiculous. You go over there with a Christian Bible, see how long you last.
Well, so if I was in charge of the military today, I think I would say, okay, all you guys in Iraq and Afghanistan, everybody come over here, dip your bullet in pig's blood, load your rifle, and then let's walk around, do surveys of the streets. No terrorist in his right mind is going to start a fight with you.
Mm-hmm.
They would be terrified of that. I mean, that would be reverse terrorism,
mm-hmm,
for them. Oh, pig blood. Oh.
Set up one tower in the middle of the street with blood bullets.
Sure. That's not respecting their religion. That's correct. Their religion's corrupt. Stupid. It's dumb. Well, thank you for joining us, folks. We'll see you tomorrow. Join us then. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
One of the greatest helpers for Truth Radio in the past has been those of you who have signed up for Lifeline telephone service, long-distance service, and local service, internet service, and now the Lifeline company, Lifeline Communications, is offering service through T-Mobile. If you have a cell phone, or if you would like to have a cell phone service that really works and has really modern, neat equipment and a great approach to this whole business of cell phone, and you want to help Truth Radio at the same time, then may I recommend that you call 800, that's 800-311-2418. That's 800-311-2418. and tell them that you want to sign up for T-Mobile through Lifeline. Phone 1-800-311-2418. Your participation with Lifeline will help Truth Radio.
Hi, I'm Lee Strobel, author of The Case for a Creator. As you know, evolution and naturalism are taught in public schools as scientific truth. But in my new book, The Case for a Creator, I reveal the evidence from science that clearly indicates God is the architect of the universe and the author of life. I've explored 6 different scientific disciplines and asked key experts for the latest data. Wherever I look, the latest evidence points straight toward God as our creator. Consider the evidence from astronomy. Everything about the Earth, from its position in the universe to its complex geological and chemical processes, work together with perfect efficiency to create a safe place for humans to live. Astronomer Guillermo Gonzalez and science philosopher J. Wesley Richards said it would take a star with the highly unusual properties of our sun to nurture living organisms on a circling planet. Numerous factors, such as the right mass, the right light, the right distance, the right orbit, and the right galaxy, make our solar system and our location in the universe ideal for a habitable environment. Harvard-educated astrophysicist John O'Keefe of NASA said if the universe had not been made with the most exacting precision, we could never have come into existence. He believed that these circumstances indicate that the universe was created for man to live in. As you can see, there's plenty of new scientific evidence that affirms the...
www.truth